Hey, Chris Manning here from Locked On Cavs. Coming up on today's show, Evan and I are going to talk about some Cavs news on a whole bunch of different fronts, including their return and their in-market workouts, and something that CEO Len Komorowski, said on CNBC, which I watched so you didn't have to, on Wednesday afternoon. That's all coming up today on Locked On Cavs, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. And today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Cleveland Cavaliers select Darius Garland from Vanderbilt University.
Cleveland! This is for you!
Evan, what's up, buddy? How are you? We got invited to the party.
It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday, I can say that much. You caught me off guard, man. I was ready to talk about our great friends at Rock Auto. Check them out today.
You get to do the read. I get to do the cold open and act like I know about cars.
The pressure's on now.
Yes.
There we go. All things considered, not too bad. It's Wednesday. That's all I could really say.
Yeah.
It's been a week.
I'm all right.
How are you?
X of Swords, a lot of fun. That's all I'm going to say. But let's start with what Len Komorowski had to say. I'm going to write this up at Fear the Sword, and we have a bunch of stuff we're going to be writing at Forbes and Fear the Sword about sort of the things said and talked about on Wednesday. But Len Komorowski, mm-hmm. the CEO of the Cleveland Cavaliers, was on the CNBC show in the middle of the afternoon on Wednesday. He said that the Cleveland Cavaliers, as an organization, hope to have as many fans in as possible by the end of the year, by 2021. He basically confirmed that the plan is going to be for everyone to be in there for the season start at that point. He said they're optimistic, quote-unquote, for the number of fans, that the number of fans being up to 10 games in Ohio is going to grow by that time. Obviously, this is going to be an ongoing kind of story within the NBA because we've had Adam Silver say 40% of revenue comes from gate events, basically, so games and driving revenue at games. The key, Komorowski said, is getting 82 games with, quote, as many fans as possible. The main thrust of the Komorowski interview was to talk about voting. He talked about it being it hasn't been the case, quote unquote, in regards to them getting any blowback and encouraging voting. He said it's been a, quote, nonpartisan, and called Frank LaRose, the Ohio Secretary of State, who Larry Nance has been flaming on Twitter recently, as an ally of voting. I would quibble with that just by myself in terms of even just my own life, kind of trying to just...
Well, you texted it to me, and I chuckled.
Let's just leave it at that. Just the absentee voting process in Ohio is much harder than it should be, especially the physical requirements of it. Anyway... The fans thing is really interesting because I think, Evan, this is going to be something that is going to happen. I think we're headed this way. I don't know exactly what it looks like. There's a long way to go. The reporting out there about the vaccine doesn't seem to me like we're going to get it before November, which I think is good. And I think a lot of people will be, you know, hesitant to take it. Obviously, I think there's a lot of mistrust in terms of where that vaccine will be coming from that would sort of allow things to fully open back up. But, Evan, just financially, this is not a thing that is surprising to me at all in terms of them wanting to get fans back in and everything like that.
Well, I'm going to share a little bit of background on myself. Chris, I'm sure you know. You do know this. We talk about my day job every now and then and how much it makes me want to rip my hair out. I'm a biomedical engineer by trade, and so I understand the hesitation when it comes to vaccines. I think it's irresponsible of the federal government to have a fucking mad dash to see who can be the first one to pop out a vaccine so they can profit the most off of it, because that's how big pharma works these days. That's a rant for another day, though. But financially, yeah, I think the Cavs will have people in the stadium, or at least in the stands for home games. So for a 41 game slate, or maybe minimized, they play a reduced season next year because the Browns are able to have fans in attendance. I haven't really been keeping up with the up and up with the Indians and why they're not doing it.
I think that's somewhat of just a baseball thing.
Rob Manfred said he wants fans in attendance for the NLCS and the World Series in their bubble situation. So we'll see how that goes. But no, the Cavs are a team that are playing third fiddle in their own market, which is a small market to begin with. Cleveland really isn't much of a basketball town unless, like, you are a regular listener our show. Thank you so much. This is I should tweet this out more often. We are consistently performing very well. Not to flex too much here, but like we're consistently performing during a pandemic with a team that has been away for 6 months. And so Chris and I are very grateful for your continued support. But the Cavs are going to struggle to get butts in the seats to begin with. It's going to be a restricted number no matter what. I think Ohio and Mike DeWine especially may soften their stance as time goes on. As we saw, Ohio State parents quite literally made the Big Ten bend the knee, and they're coming back this year, and fans will be in attendance for those games, I'm sure, too, because, you know, nothing's sadder than watching a bunch of grown adults throw a hissy fit over their quote-unquote their Buckeyes not playing. So the Cavs are a different story in themselves, and financially, it'd be really tough for them not to have ticket revenue coming in, because that is the main source of income for the Cavs. I think I did the math when they canceled the season. They were slated to lose a pretty penny. It was a couple mil. That's just from like resale market value alone, and like those are pretty cheap to begin with. The Cavs weren't a good team, so it's just it's an awkward situation, and I don't know if I agree. If the Cavs are able to institute proper social distancing and safety parameters, which I think they will be able to, I'm okay with it. I doubt us as members of the media will be present for it unless like we're in a plexiglass press box and we have 6 foot press conferences with players and coaches next year, Chris. But not really too sure what's going to happen next, but I understand where Len's coming from the aspect that the Cavs financially need to be viable, especially during all of this, and having fans coming to games and, you know, buying concessions and alcohol and everything else, like, it's more than just the ticket price that they're relying on here, but, like, losing those sources of revenue is fatal for a franchise.
Yeah, I think it's problematic league-wide if you want to look at the finances going forward. There's a lot of, I think, concern about that, and I understand why they want to do it. It'll be interesting to see how it gets handled market to market. I think we're obviously, there's a lot more important things than billionaires in their pockets and their ability to pay millionaires their salaries. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this is like a top 10 vital issue currently going on right now, because it is not. But if you want to look at how the Cavs are going to operate and understand as best as possible, the ongoing confusion about NBA finances is 100% something that is going to be a continuing thing going forward. So just continue to see how this plays out. Again, we don't know how it's going to play out. There's a lot of unknowns still here, but fans in stands in 2021 in an indoor space versus an outdoor space as well, mind you. Is it going to be something to watch? Although it does seem like I think a lot of people will be willing to go do that. And Evan, before we wrap up our first segment here, I just want to acknowledge that a couple Cavs players did voice their, disdain for the non-charges in the Breonna Taylor case in Louisville. Alphonso McKinney was the first one I saw. Now, I've only seen Twitter, so some of them may have posted to Instagram or other platforms. I've not seen them. But Alphonso McKinney tweeted, quote, "So three officers involved in the killing of Breonna Taylor. One gets indicted for basically shooting at the neighbor's house. The other two walk free. That's straight BS. He also retweeted a Jamal Crawford tweet saying they treat animals with more respect in this country than they do black lives. You also had Kevin Porter Jr. share some disdain and uncomfort with the lack of charges and prosecution of the officers who killed Breonna Taylor. We're not going to dive into the politics that you can go elsewhere for that, but I think it's just acknowledging that this is something that is going to continue to be in players' minds. I thought you had a lot of Mike Malone gave some really strong statements out of the bubble. There's a really good Malika Andrews story about how this broke and kind of reverberated among the players still down in Orlando. There's a really good WNBA PA statement that Brady Klopfer just tweeted out that I was reading while you were talking. But, you know, look, this is something that I think if you're look, if you want, I would just say this, if you want to be in a world where our sports and politics are not so off, like they're, I think they're intrinsically linked, but if they're not smacking each other in the face all the time, if you want some version of that, then I think it's, you got to be an ally, and listen to these players and listen to these, this predominantly black workforce. And if you aren't already, I think you, you absolutely should be starting now. And this is something you should listen to them on.
I agree. I don't think you should be telling these players, to shut up and dribble. I think that's incredibly ignorant. I think you need to shut the fuck up and listen to them and understand why they're hurting, because JB Bickerstaff, who when he came on our show said it best, this isn't a political issue, this is a human rights issue. And like you said, we could go for hours on end. I'm disgusted, I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm frustrated by the decision that happened in Louisville today. I think it's wrong. I think the fact that, Chris, if you or I stole an iPhone from an Apple store in Louisville, we'd face a more harsh sentence than that officer did today. I think that's flawed. I think the system as a whole is flawed. And just people need to listen to why NBA players are upset, in a, like you said, in a predominantly black league, but why black Americans and African Americans and any minority or person of color is just frustrated and scared in general. As a white person, I think that's the best thing you can do is just shut up and listen and not try and speak on their behalf. And I think that's kind of what Chris and I are getting at, too, is we're not going to try and speak on that, speak on the behalf of those who are enraged and disenfranchised by.
I will say, if there, I will link below to a, Evan, I don't know if you're familiar with the reporting, but there's a New York Times reporter named Rukmini Kalamani. I'm mispronouncing her last name, but she, I retweeted this story that she covers ISIS as her primary beat. Which I shouldn't be laughing at, but that is an insane, that's an insane beat, but she did a really deep profile of Breonna Taylor, her life, and how it ended, obviously, and it's the story she wrote is among the most impactful journalism that you will read. It is journalism at its very best. I think the New York Times often makes, does a lot of dumb stuff, and plays down and amplifies things in weird ways, but this is not one of those cases, so I would encourage you to read the story again. I'll link it below in the show notes. We're going to take a quick pause here. You'll hear an ad. It's obviously a weird transition. We're just going to acknowledge that we're leaning into a weird transition with our kind of an ad about to, you're about to hear Evan read, but take a quick little pause. Again, be well, do something, make yourself happy, and listen when it is appropriate to listen, but take a quick pause. We'll be right back.
As Chris mentioned before, this episode of Locked On Cavs is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules to brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Check them out today at RockAuto.com.
And with that, we'll be right back. All right, we are back here on Locked On Cavs. Evan, let's turn our attention to the bubble, the in-person market workouts for the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm going to let you pick. Do you want to start with Jack Collin Sexton, or do you want to start with Dylan Windler? Those kind of there's a lot that was said. I think our interview with JB was much more informative than what he said on Wednesday. I think the two big for me is Collin and also in Dylan Windler.
Well, as a short king, Chris, and you too are a short king, and as a thick boy myself, let's talk about Collin Sexton somehow adding 10 to 15 pounds of pure muscle.
I'm just going to say it.
Frame.
Like, I don't. I.
Well, I'm looking at a picture of him in practice, and yeah, he looks big.
I know, like, I jokingly tweeted a panel from the Immortal Hulk run by Al Ewing of the Hulk, just of that being Colin Sexton reporting to camp, but he actually does look bigger. And
I was sent to you like deep fried memes of Colin,
yeah, it
like,
was it was it was yeah it was kind of wild when you sent me that. But you know, Evan, it says a lot that like we were at the point in our friendship where you can send me like just bad memes and you just know I'm not gonna judge. So real one.
Well, hey, I still apologize for sending you like 7
texts. No, it was deserved.
In a row,
it was deserved.
So, okay.
Colin Sexton, if he's 6'1", and then he was listed at, I want to say, like 190 last year. I'm going to double check that according to BREF, but he has a 6'6 wingspan, 6'1. If he's 10, 15 pounds heavier, and this is a, let's just say he plays at that weight, right? Let's just say he plays around 200 pounds. That's closer to like Eric Bledsoe size. And he's really fast, and I don't think he's gonna lose the speed by adding that muscle, but like if that muscle is functional and he's like a lot stronger as a result of this, that is like a really 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 interesting development. Now Bledsoe like is a little longer, 6'8" wingspan, but like he's turning.
Wait, Chris, how long is Colin's wingspan verbatim? 6'6"? Are you sure about that? Are you sure it's not 6'8"?
I think it's 6'6".
You can pause.
I think it's 6'6". This is all staying in. I'm not editing this.
I know. I'm just more so friend of the pod, Justin Rowan, told me that you keep taking an inch off every
Justin,
time we bring
Justin,
it up.
Justin, release more than one podcast a week and then come at me. Okay?
Hey, their episode with Sedano was really good. Give
don't
him credit.
I'm out on Justin right now. Okay, so the NBA.com official 2018 draft profile ranking has it at 6'7.25.
Okay,
so
that's
let's 6'8". Okay, you're rounding up. You're rounding up. You're not doing rounding right. You're the engineer, and you're not rounding correctly.
6.25, you round 5. Well, you need to know what comes after 5 if it's higher than 5.
Yeah, but you're doing... It's 6.25. It's not... Evan, it's... You're rounding incorrectly.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chris, we could use metrics at this point because you're a soccer fan.
This isn't the point. Math is stupid and not the point. Math is not stupid. Math is very important. I apologize. Anyway, Colin Sexton being like stronger like that is really, 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 really interesting. And if this is a weight that he stays at, is this is a weight that he plays at next season, that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Donovan Mitchell comps become more and more realistic. I'm just really going to rub your nose in this right now. I think him mostly adding muscle mass, you know, allows him to defend twos more properly. He is 6'1". He has a 6'8 wingspan. He is between 200 and 205 pounds if he really did add that much muscle mass. So he has the girth, at least, to defend twos. It doesn't really matter how tall you are, because PJ Tucker proved that if you are long enough and you have a 6'8 wingspan like Colin Sexton, again, he's got a 6'8 wingspan, contrary to what Chris believes, he can defend two guards, and I think adding that extra weight will allow him to hold his own, especially when, you know, he gets posted up by James Harden or something like that, because it was so painful watching Colin have to defend James Harden last season when they did play the Rockets, and like that was rough. But I think it's going to be an interesting change for Colin. I wonder if it's affected his speed at all, because he is blindingly flat fast in the open floor, so I wonder if like this addition of muscle will slow him down a little bit, but I still have my doubts.
I don't think this is like him getting so... It doesn't seem like he got so big that it changed his physique. It just seems like he added on to it, like the natural extent of his frame.
Yet. He isn't full Doug Martin yet, but... Where was I going with this? Something else we missed... with Colin giving his Q&A, it was one, he was really pushy with Kevin's. Like, he actually wanted to talk to us, which is a surprise, but I mean, it was also like the quickest of the three press conferences. I think it lasted 5-6 minutes. Kevin was like 15, JB was like 20-25, because JB's well spoken and he explains his thoughts clearly, so I appreciate that. And but Colin also mentioned like he's been working on dunking too, so like I'm more interested to see like what else he's done to his body athletically to, you know, add a little bounce to his game and add an extra quicker step. But I'm all here for our short king, Colin Sexton. I'm raising my wine glass to our king, Chris, as two short boys ourselves, for him to show that no matter how tall you are, you can be an NBA two guard. And I think Colin Sexton is going to be the most fun player to watch for the Cavs this year. Besides Kevin Porter, but like consistently, like on a night-to-night basis, if I zero in on Colin, I'm going to have a good
time. Yeah, I'm just going to say this now. I am no longer just going to like pretend I fully understand what Colin Sexton is going to be.
Thank you for joining the club. I gave up back in like March, man.
I was already kind of there, but I'm just like, it's on my record now.
He has surpassed the expectations of an 8th overall pick at any point past, you know, that weird slump in his rookie season. Post All-Star break, his rookie season, he really started to exceed my expectations, and he's continued to do so at every juncture. And it's cliche to say that hard work pays off, and he's a real gym rat. He's a lunch pail worker, first one in, last one out. You can come up with so many cliches to describe Colin, but they're all true. Yeah. And, like, we joked with all of his teammates and all of his coaches when we've done, like, off-season or break shows with them. Like, Colin is the player who probably hates the most being away from the gym, but he still found a way to get swole. And the sky's the limit for the kid. I'm excited to see where his long-term potential is. But I don't know. Colin's gonna be a fun player, and I'm glad I was wrong on him.
What side of the ball is the weight more impactful for? If he is 10 pounds of muscle stronger, defense. What does it matter? What side of the ball does it matter for?
Defense, because he's able to at least hold his own. I mean, like he's still 6'1". It's like I know I was just saying like he can tap into his length, like slow down two guards, but he had a little bit of girth to be able to slow down those two guards too. And Colin's already so freakishly fast, I think that maybe he needs a little bit more like of a sturdier foundation and core to be able to hold his own.
I agree that it's defense, but there's a case that it's offense, because if depending on what his skill level ultimately is on the defensive end, there is a world where him being stronger on offense allows him to draw fouls and withstand contact much better, and thus become more than like an average-ish finisher at the rim.
That's the final step for his offensive game, IMHO. Is if he's able to consistently use his ability to, like, because he drives to the basket with, like, reckless abandon. If he's able to tap into like consistently drawing fouls, rubbing my hands.
Would you put the finishing at the rim and drawing fouls above him being a better passer / creator for others?
I want to wait on the creator / passer because it's a small sample size, but he was averaging almost 4 assists when JB fully instituted just a simple pick and roll heavy offense. So maybe just Colin making simple reads leads to him making smart plays, and if he's able to do that consistently, I think we're okay there. But drawing fouls would be cool, but him being able to be a complete point guard on the offensive side of the ball, like in terms of passing and everything, would be awesome, especially if Darius Garland's returns aren't as promising as like they were.
Yes. All right, season. We're gonna take one more break, come back, talk about Dylan Windler right after this. All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. Evan, I just want to say this. The story that Colin told about the dunk was just like high school. Like, I don't doubt its validity or anything like that, but it was straight out of like a kind of like a cheesy like high school movie kind of.
Well, since the Cavs have yet to post audio on the NBA content board and on Cavs.com, why don't you recant?
So basically the story they were doing some 5-on-0 and Dylan Windler dunked, and according to Colin Sexton, he drew a lot of cheering, drew a lot of praise and kind of, I guess, celebration is the right word from his teammates. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm. It was a jovial experience. Yeah, I'd say it was a jovial experience for all parties involved.
But I, the more and more I think about this, Evan, and him being back, I feel like I think more so than anyone else I would say like if you want to look at like guys that are on the roster last year, like, you know, KPJ probably will gain something and Garland too. Those guys have something to kind of prove here. But when I think about it and I think about what you could get out of him next year, as a guy, as opposed to like a Dean Wade or a Matt Mooney or whomever like that, or Jordan Bell, I think he's a guy that can come in and make a case that he deserves like a real shot at minutes, because the team's starting small forward is in Turkey.
No, the team's starting small forward is at training camp. The team's reserve small forwards.
Semantics. The fact that like Jetty Osmond is not there is a really big opportunity for Dylan Windler to kind of come in, make an impact, and kind of, you know, like, look, the JB and Lindsey Godley, when we talked to her, both said that a lot of this is about getting stuff on tape that you might want to run later. And if you're there and you look good doing certain stuff that they want to do on tape, I can't imagine that that's not going to hurt your chances of getting minutes later on.
Mm-mm. No, it won't. And I think I'm interested to see how the Cavs view Dylan long term. Is he a 2-3? Is he a 3-4? Is he strictly a 3? Is he a 2-4? Just to get weird with it, because JB did admit that they are practicing lineup versatility again. More or less saying that the all big lineup is back and better than ever.
Except for the fact that Andre Drummond isn't there, and he's like essential to that.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like Colin was sending a pot shot at Andre and maybe some of the veterans when he said it was really cool that Kevin, you know, wasn't selfish about staying home, but...
I don't want to, so, recklessly speculate about that, but...
I felt there was a little weight behind that. I'm like, ooh, Colin had a little spice to that one.
That you could say that aimed at, because, like, unless Colin's like...
It's not Tristan because Thompson.
Him and Deli have the contract situation, so there's literally no reason for them to go to this.
Yeah, exactly. But to jump back to your thing, like, I don't know how the Cavs view Dylan Windler potentially, but JB did say it best. He hasn't played. I mean, he played a little bit with the Charge. I think it was a game or two.
I want to say a single game. I'll double check that as you're talking, but I think it was a single game.
Okay, so he played a single game. He didn't play well in that game, single games. No. He was super rusty, and JB said he's been a year removed from basketball, so I think maybe the cheers were, like, you know, just celebrating the fact that he is able to trust his body enough, because I remember when Gordon Hayward, you know, turned his ankle 180 degrees in Cleveland. One of his biggest things was in recovery was like learning to trust his body when he goes up to like dunk or do a layup and like land properly. Like, his body's not going to break as soon as he lands. Like, that was a big thing for Dylan to be able to dunk and land. Like, that's a big progress thing. And then, so, but the jump that, like, the show that he, first off, that he is able to physically endure playing against these guys, it's going to take probably, it's going to be a tough learning curve for him, because he's a full year removed from playing basketball. He's coming in as a rookie. He will be fighting a little bit for rotation minutes, but even when he was bouncing back from John Boeheim breaking his leg, the Cavs did view him as a meaningful member of this rotation, and I think he still has the potential to do that. The Cavs are so thin at the three because it's KPJ, it's Jetty, it's Alphonso McKinney if he makes the roster for opening day, whether it's in January, February, or March. And then, like, on the at the two as well, like, behind Colin, you have, like, Dante Exum who could play the two. You have Kevin Porter who the Cavs view as a two. Jetty could play the two as well, but for some reason the Cavs want to play him in a 3-4 role. So that's why I said I was interested in what Dylan's role really is, like, how the Cavs view him, but... there are opportunities for minutes for him as long as he can remain healthy and show, like, maybe knock off some of the rust during this 6-day period they have of training camp with each other. It'll be a good period for them, but I don't know. I'm excited for Dylan. I think I got high on his college footage. Trevor Magnotti shared, like, listen, 26 is a good spot for him when they picked him. He doesn't love the fit, but, like, Dylan has the potential to be a very good, like, rebounder and, you know, maybe a two-way player, because defensively he has the measurables to do so, but I hope he's able to salvage what he does have and turn it into a solid.
Yeah, 100%. And just for the record, Dylan Windler played two games in the G League, averaged 18.5 minutes a game, shot 44% from the field. Not like the most, 6.5 points, you know, not like insanely good numbers, but, you know, like, when we talked to JB, he called Dylan, you know, a second first-round pick. Like, that is...
yeah, I mean, that's what he is.
That it's a good way to view him, even if the full financial benefits of that aren't really felt with Dylan anymore. I think that's a good way to look at him, and I'm excited to see, you know, hopefully we get to hear from him during camp. That would be... that's, he's probably high on my list of guys that I would actually kind of like to hear from in that kind of scrum setting.
Same. I also want to hear that he pulled up from half court like he did against the Spurs in Summer League. I want
to
hear that again.
All right, that's going to be it for today's show. Thanks so much to everyone for listening. Thanks for your support through all of this. We have some fun stuff we're going to be announcing. We're going to be doing for the first time next week, so stay tuned for that. Launching some new stuff at Fear the Sword, which is going to be really, really fun. And also book club tomorrow. First two chapters and a little reflection on the Preps to Pros era of the Boys to Men, the Boys Among Men, excuse me, the book by Jonathan Abram. So if you haven't read that, get it and read it. And looking forward to chatting with Evan. Why don't you send us out?
I mean, if you want to listen to Boys to Men while reading Boys Among Men, be my guest.
Be a flex.
That's what I kind of figured Chris and I are going to talk about. Yep, there you go. Be flexible. But and as always, register to vote, go Cavs, wear a mask, practice social distancing. And it was only for a little bit, but I am happy this team's back.
It felt normal again to be waiting for 20 extra minutes.
Yes.
All right, talk to y'all soon.